So again, just going over our thought questions for our study as we go through what we've studied the last 3 weeks or so is just how do the readings from this week help us to abide in the Word, since that's our theme for the year, is abiding in the Word. What do we learn about God and what do we learn about Jesus as we go through the readings each day, each week, each month, all through the year? And then I put out these questions at the kind of the start before we started with May 18th and 19th, 20th, and through the week. It's just something to think about as you go through the Proverbs, is that roughly 3,000 years have passed since these were written, more or less, right? And so as you read, do you find the Proverbs to be dated? Are they dated? Do they not apply to us as people today? Have we grown beyond the Proverbs? Like when you read through the Proverbs and you see the advice that's given and some of the warnings about consequences that happen from not following the advice and the instruction of the Proverbs, you think, yeah, we've already got that. You know, that's a question to think about. Have we grown beyond the wisdom in the Proverbs? And then also, I think it's really interesting to note, either mentally or writing down a scripture in your Bible, where you see similar instruction repeated or reemphasized in the New Testament. You know, as you're reading through this, there should be verses or instructions that are given that you go, oh, yep, Jesus said that, or James said that. We see that a lot, right? We see that a lot of the Proverbs, similar instruction given to James that are given in the letter that James wrote, or that Jesus said when he walked on the earth. So just, I think it's really interesting as we go through the Proverbs to make notes there, to highlight things, and then just to think, have we as people in the thousands of years that we like to think of ourselves as such a advanced society, right? That we're smarter than the previous generation. I think that's pretty common with people as we go from generation to generation, that we're more advanced, we're smarter, we've learned better. Thoughts about that? Gosh, I saw your hand fly up. I've definitely learned that in recent years, that, you know, where should I sit as you go into a room to brief somebody, right? Where should I sit? That's a good question to ask. And we actually talked about that on the way to church this morning. That when we exalt ourselves versus letting someone else exalt us or praise us. Yeah, Millie?
One of the things I thought about too is sort of like when you think, I would come up. Very predictable what people are going to do.
Yeah. Anybody else? Did you went through thoughts that jumped out for you or answers to these questions? How about similar instruction repeated or reemphasized in the New Testament? We could probably kind of apply this as we go from day to day, but if there's anything that immediately jumped out to you that stuck with you throughout the week. But again, as we go from day to day, and you feel like that the verse that you want to reference is applicable to the 18th or 19th or so on, then feel free to bring that up or point that out. All right, so May 18th, the question that jumped out to me after I read the readings for May 18th was, what is our appropriate attitude to have when it comes to discipline and instruction? What attitude are we to have? What's the advice given there? What jumped out to you? say, I'm sorry, say again.
It depends on whether you're smart or
Okay. Yeah, any verses that jumped out that stuck out to you? Verses that you highlighted, maybe? Right, yeah, and I highlighted that one as well, and I wrote Hebrews 12, 7 through 11 as well, right next to it. It does sound, it's almost strikingly similar to what we read in Hebrews chapter 12 about how we're to view discipline, that in the same way that a father would discipline his son, it's out of love. It's out of wanting the son to get better, to grow, to improve, to reach their maximum potential, right? I mean, when we try to emphasize that with our kids quite often, is that, you know, the reason that we're instructing you or disciplining you or having you go through this is because we see something better for you down the road. We see where you can be. We're able to kind of see that based off how we lived our lives and life experience, and you're seeing the right now sometimes, and helping them see that there's a path that's further out than right there today. Anything else? Any other verses that jumped out? Yeah. Despise themselves. That's a good one. Here's something I came up with. Just easy right off the bat. 19:20, we saw that at the bottom of the first page we read that that we're to listen to advice and instruction. I mean, it's very plain and simple. Listen to advice and accept discipline. Clear, very clear right there. And then as we just discussed and referenced also over in Hebrews chapter 12, that discipline and instruction, it comes from a place of love. It's love for the person. It's wanting them to get better, to reach their maximum potential, to grow and to serve and to learn and do better. I can think of the times I've grown the most in my life is usually through some kind of hardship or correction or getting smacked down a little bit, you know, maybe not literally, but figuratively, sometimes literally, and just learning to do better afterwards. Going through some kind of struggle and trial has allowed me to grow and get better and learn and hopefully reach my maximum potential one day. And then we did see that children need discipline. Those of us who are parents or those of us who are still children living in our parents' houses, that we need to learn discipline. And children need to learn discipline. They need discipline in their lives. That fence that we provide for our children, it's there for their own good. It's there for their own good, and it helps them to learn how to eventually set fences for themselves, right? That's what we're trying to help them learn, is that by disciplining them early, and then they grow into learning how to discipline themselves and learn from instruction that they're going to get later. The other one was that jumped out to me was Proverbs 27 and verse 7 and then Proverbs 15 and verse 22 is that receiving counsel, that good counsel and receiving good counsel leads to good results. If we want really good results, it was mostly talking about battle and those sorts of things, but I think it's generally applied that if we want good results, we need to get good instruction, good counsel from that. What's ironic about Solomon writing this proverb? Not to jump ahead too much. What's going to happen to his son, Rehoboam? He's going to take some bad counsel, right? And what's the result of that? Again, not to get too far ahead. I think I might be jumping on Clayton's readings later. Okay. So bad counsel can lead to bad results on the negative side of that. Anything else that we saw from May 18? New Testament passages maybe that you felt were referenced in what we read? Keith? Yeah, very good. Okay. May 19th, what were your favorite proverbs about the heart that you read this day? There were a lot of proverbs that we read about the heart and our attitude. We just spent a lot of time in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Talking about love, it felt like it was kind of, a lot of stuff complemented what we studied earlier this year. Yeah, Josh?
One of the ones my kids and I kind of liked, 26 verse 23, like a coating of silver draws on earthenware, our fervent lips with a evil heart. The idea that you have some cheap clay spoon that can break really easy, but it's covered in, fine silver. But it just crumbles when you try to use it, and you do that with people that are deceitful, malintent, even no matter how much they dress up their life.
Right. Very good. Anything else from May 19th? How does it describe who tests the heart? How about that one? Yeah, and that was at the top of page 631. This is Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 3. The crucible for silver and the furnace for gold. But the Lord tests the heart. What New Testament passage jumps out to you? What does that make you think of? Yeah, James? Yeah, the one that jumped out to me that I thought of was 1 Peter chapter 1, right? That when he's talking about their trials and the things that we go through, verses 6 through 9 of 1 Peter chapter 1. In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been grieved by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, so this, seems like there's a little bit of a connection there of our testing of our faith and the testing of the heart here that's described in Proverbs chapter 17, verse 3. Anything else about the heart that anybody else wrote down? The Lord tests the heart. The first one I wrote down, and again the reference there in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. And that I like how it's described here, and this is also on page 631, Proverbs chapter 20, verse 27, that the heart is the window of the soul. The heart is the window of the soul. What's he saying there? Why is the heart the window of the soul? Buddy?
Shows real desires and motives.
Yeah. Okay, so
no matter what you might say.
The NIV here says that the human spirit is the lamp of the Lord. So that's the wording that's used here in the NIV. The human spirit is the lamp of the Lord that sheds light on one's inmost being. And so, Bill, you said what? Again, sorry.
Look. Your desires, you can say one thing, but your heart shows what you truly desire.
Anything else? Someone turn to Matthew chapter 15, verse 19. What does that verse say? Someone read that for us, please. Okay, and what's the context there is what? Jesus makes this statement. Yeah, the Jews there at the time were worried a lot about defiling themselves when they eat, right? And what hand they eat with, how they wash their hands, things that are entering their body. And Jesus is making the point that it's the inward man, it's the heart, that's the lamp of the soul that shows who we truly are, what our true desires are in life. I also wrote down love covers over all wrongs. We saw that in Proverbs chapter 10, verse 12. And we see the same idea over in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8, that love covers a multitude of sins. Why does love cover over all wrongs? Sorry. How does love cover wrongs? How does love cover sin? And the last one I have on here is, do not rejoice when your enemy fails. We saw that in Proverbs 24:17. Do not rejoice when your enemy fails. Similar language by Jesus over in Matthew chapter 5, verse 44. Can someone read Matthew 5:44? It's a very similar language, again, to what we read in Proverbs chapter 24, verse 17. Do not gloat when your enemy fails. When they stumble, do not let your heart rejoice. And then the warning there is, or the Lord will see and disapprove and turn his wrath away from them. Okay, so praying for our enemies and not rejoicing when we see them fail, not relishing in them getting their just rewards. Anything else from May chapter 19? May 19th. This is just one of those days. Someone speaking is hard.
Mm-hmm. Caught up in the things of this world.
Yeah, well said. It certainly doesn't seem like something we've grown beyond, right, as a society. We see a lot of that in the world around us right now. People who put on a facade or an appearance of being somebody or having things and being much more well off than they actually are, and behind it it's just a house of cards. Anything else from May 19th? Agreed. May 19th was there was a lot of good practical things and on that day of reading on Monday. How about May 20? May 20. A lot there about self-control. Warning against a lot of warnings about self-control. Why is self-control so important? Why are there so many warnings about self-control? Why is it a fruit of the Spirit? Not everybody at once.
Because we're fleshly beings, the Spirit, right? So the war of the flesh and the Spirit is constantly out there. Passions and desires that we have to temper, we have to rule over. So whether that's knowing how to, in this sense, right, don't drink alcohol to the extent that you're losing control. You have to temper that. Same way, passions. Self-control, I think, is an unfortunate translation, especially in the New Testament, because if it's a fruit of the Spirit, it is the Spirit that is giving us the strength to control the passions, not my own personal we're not allowing the flesh to be part of us to overcome it.
Yeah, that's a good one as well. Any others? Yeah, I think that's part of with our society too, of this idea of thinking we've grown beyond or we're smarter than the previous generation, is that the smarter we become, sometimes we think that knowledge just fixes everything, but a lot of what we go through is a behavioral thing, right? It's actually putting the knowledge into practice. That's where wisdom comes into play, is all the knowledge without any self-discipline or self-control means nothing. It means nothing. And so, understanding that we still have to control ourselves, it's a behavioral thing. We need to put ourselves into physical discipline as well. And self-control is important in that way. How about the warnings against drinking that we saw this week, or specifically on May 20? What do the Proverbs warn us about when it comes to drinking? Yeah, Keith?
So there's a simple statement just at the bottom of page 245 and Proverbs 20. Wine is a mocker and beer is a brawler. And so actually we'll see a similar thing next week, in our reading this week. It basically is just telling us why drinking is not good. We may want to rationalize and say, well, there's nothing wrong with just drinking here and there. But the question is, do we want to associate ourselves with what it says about wine and beer in this problem? Do we want to be associated with a mocker and a brawler? That's a question we should ask.
Yeah, very good. What are some of the things that it also describes? It's a mocker. It's a brawler. Leads to poverty. That's how it's described. And then bites like a snake and poisons like a viper. You know, I'm not so sure that I'd say, you know, maybe I'll get a little bite of a viper. Right? As Keith alluded to, is like, you know, why are we testing the snake when it comes to alcohol and drinking? Are we getting just a little bit too close, or just testing a little bit? Yeah, and then this statement that he says later in Proverbs 23, verses 29 through 35, this reference here, that he's so confused that he doesn't even know. They hit me, I'll be fine. I'll wake up and find another drink, okay? To the point of just being completely out of it, unaware of your surroundings, and unable to comprehend and understand what's going on around you. Anything else that stood out to anybody regarding alcohol yet? Josh?
That whole passage in Proverbs 23 is pretty funny. I mean, the beginning of it is like, who is upset, who has sorrow, who is complaining, who has bruises, who has bloodshot eyes, and it's like, oh, well, those are the people that are drinking. And that's kind of obvious, everyone knows that. And then after the strange sight, he talks about mind and that confusing thing. It says, you're like one sleeping on the high seas, up on the rigging. Kind of a visceral image of someone that's drunk, you know, kind of like swaying. I don't know. It's a pretty spot on graphic depiction of what it's like to be both inebriated and like in need of inebriation.
Yeah, and the question is that's asked at the very end of that, when will I wake up so I can find another drink? That's kind of the idea, is that they're not learning from that at all, right? Mocking, brawling, swaying back and forth, total confusion, not in control of themselves, and then it just didn't learn anything from it. Just go through that again, wake up, repeat. What are the consequences of adultery? Not to shift gears too much, we're still on self-control. How about adultery? What consequences are talked about there? What are the warnings given? Yeah, what does adultery lead to ultimately?
In one case, it says it leads to the husband beating you
up. Yeah. Yeah. Look out for the jealous husband that you're committing sin against as well.
Yeah, no one who touches her will go unpunished.
How about Proverbs 7, verse 27? What's the ultimate... What does adultery ultimately lead to? Kind of the end of that little section of... So like verses 23 through 27. What's the ultimate consequence of adultery? Death. Okay? Adultery leads to death. Okay? And if you had a situation where you're facing impending doom, ultimate death, you wouldn't just continue down a road that it says this road leads to impending death. You would change your path, right? But we allow ourselves sometimes to stay on these paths, and we can see we're walking down a path that's going to lead to adultery. We're putting ourselves in situations, we're having conversations that we shouldn't have. We're leading down the path that's potentially heading towards adultery. And instead of seeing the warning sign of that, this is leading to death. The ultimate death, changing our path, for some reason, it's just too tempting. We just continue down the path sometimes. Anything else for May 20th? Greg. Absolutely. And I think we did reference Ephesians 5. Maybe Keith or somebody referenced that one as well. That it, as opposed to being filled with alcohol to give us joy or fun, that we're to be filled with the Spirit. That's where true joy is going to be found. And so that you're not just reaching a state of confusion, ultimately, is what alcohol is going to bring. And then you're just going to wake up and need more alcohol. Rather, be filled with the Spirit. Where true joy is found. Thank you. Anything else from May 20th? There's a couple that I wrote down. Lack of self-control is like a city whose walls are broken. You're just allowing things to come in. When you don't have control, you're allowing impending doom. Now, alcohol leads to mockery, brawling, poverty, woe, sorrow, strife. Those are all the things that are described there in Proverbs chapter 23. And ultimately, the thing that we need to come away with is that adultery leads to death. All right. Ooh. May 21. Why are there so many proverbs about our speech? There are a lot of proverbs regarding our speech. What proverbs stood out the most to you? Where do you see New Testament references? Ready, go. You can contain the tongue, you're perfect. No. Anything else? How about just verses that you highlighted as you went through the daily reading on May 21? What verses did you highlight? How many books have been written about that very proverb? You could probably almost fill this room with secular books that have been written about this, that proverb, that one proverb. To answer before listening, that is folly and shame. That it more or less are along that line, right? That are about that idea or trying to help us learn that idea better. Absolutely. I highlighted that one. That stuck out to me. How about 15:28? Proverbs 15:28 on page 640. The heart of the righteous weighs its answers. I think that's a similar idea, right? You're listening, you think, consider, then you answer. Anything else? I love this one. 15:1. Proverbs 15:1, page 641. A gentle answer turns away wrath. A gentle answer turns away wrath. But a harsh word stirs up anger. You know, you can see this. When you're an outsider watching two people, you can really see this play out. One person is angry, and they speak out of anger, and their voice is raised, and they bow up. And if the other person answers in a similar way, it just starts to escalate, right? But if the other person just says, hey, we're good here, and de-escalates a little bit, gives a gentle answer, it's amazing how it just starts to bring the temperature down between the two people in that situation. Anything else that stood out regarding our speech? Yeah. Lee?
I was thinking that the previous day,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's Proverbs about having thoughtful speech. We've looked at a few of those. Proverbs about having trustworthy and helpful speech, things that are going to help other people, being trustworthy in what we say, speaking the truth. And then ultimately for us to realize that our speech is powerful, whether good or bad, it can lead to a very powerful, impactful result. And so we need to be aware of that, need to be careful of that, as was alluded, James 3 speaks to that multiple times. Steve, do you have your hand up?
That's not the best thing, though. The best thing is not just to keep silent, but to speak from the Spirit of God, right? You share from that. But if you're not sure about that, then just keep it down.
Okay. Very good. Keith?
One outline of what you were talking about earlier. On 642, Proverbs 17:14, one of the guy my attention, starting a quarrel is like preaching the jam. But drop the matter.
It's very easy to see that in our kids, right? And sometimes I find that I can see that with my kids. I can see that like a mile away before it even starts. Just that one little comment that's going to lead. But then it's difficult sometimes to see that in ourselves. What comments are we making or what answers are we giving that just kind of inch the argument or inch that discussion towards where it's going to turn into a debate of that's not good. Bill?
Well, so many of the other sinful acts that are condemned, Scripture and that Psalm speaks to begin with speech, where they are around the speech. They are false witnesses, an obvious one, but adultery begins with speech. There's no improper speech. There isn't going to be adultery. And in fact, in Proverbs, when he writes about the adulterous woman, it begins with speech.
Mm-hmm.
Part of why our tongues and our speech are so important to control and to bring the students, and more importantly, bring into harmony with God's will.
Yeah. Gosh.
Think about, I'm going to take a look at Camden for a fire. You have the three legs. You have heat, you have air.
You know, it was over in the readings for May 22nd, but I reference this one a lot. Proverbs chapter 26, verses 18 and 19. Like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death is one who deceives their neighbor and says, I was only joking. You know, that seems like it could have gone under the speech thing. But we see that a lot. Like, oh, you throw out this little remark and, oh, I was just kidding. It was meant to be a joke. But we do that a lot as people, don't we? And I'm throwing myself in that group, and then it's easy to say, oh, I was joking, but the bad feelings it can cause between you and the other person. I have a very good friend who occasionally does this, and it's amazing at this, like the angst that it can cause, and it just like the feelings it can bubble up because they'll throw out some little remark that, you know, I mean, it was just a joke. Well, didn't feel like a joke at the time. And so we should be careful with things like that. Sarcasm can work in certain cases, but oftentimes it's just going to pull out a scab. May 22nd. This one might be a little, Jason has joked a couple times about guess what Jason is thinking. This might be a little bit of like guess what James was thinking with this one. What's the key to ensuring that we are honest? I'm curious to see if you went the same place with this as I did, as you read through May 22nd, and I'll quickly get into my list because... All right. So, button's working a little faster. So what I noticed when I went through May 22nd is there was three things when it comes to being honest and making sure that we're honest in what we do and what we say, how we live our lives. Is first of all, we have to have the right mind. We have to have an honest mind. Proverbs 3:29 speaks to that. Then we have to have the right heart. You have to have love for the other person. We saw that in Proverbs chapter 12, verse 20. And then also that we have to have the right source of truth. You know, in order to be honest, we need to know what truth is. Do anybody else have anything else for this question? Today is just one of those days I'm going to be tongue-tied. It's a good thing I didn't give myself any speaking roles for this worship service today. Anything else? Yeah. To hate a lie or to what is false? Very good. Josh?
One thing that really struck me, as someone who like prides himself up a lot, is all we talk about like the honest weight and scale. And I think a couple of days earlier, in Proverbs 20:14, it says, worthless, says the buyer. And then he goes off and boasts about the purchase. Like, I've done that where I've, you know, bought something and then said, you know, it's got a hole in it here. And then you get the price down. And then you immediately go off and tell your friend, like, dude, like, I'm just an idiot. Or the idea that, like, you know, if I'm selling something, do I disclose, like, all of the, you know, little imperfections of it so the buyer knows? But then when I'm buying, like, I want to know every single thing that's wrong with it so I can get a good deal. And so I've really worked hard, like, the last couple of years to make sure that I just sold a truck to myself. The guy knew everything, and he got a really good deal, same kind of deal like I would want to get if I was buying it. Because in the end, like, a couple dollars that I make on something, like, the Heavenly Father owns the cattle on a thousand hills. Choices that I make in my life are not the ones that enrich me, or, you know, so having those honest scales and just making sure that you treat someone the same way that you would want to be treated is kind of a life-changing attitude.
Very good. So May 23rd, a lot here about economic standing, finances, that sort of thing. And so the question I came up here, what is the right balance for us to have? Our views about money, views about work, stewardship, saving, economic hardships. What did you come up with after you read through the readings for May 23rd? What's the right balance? What are some practical things that we should take away? Very good. Yeah, that one, I highlighted that one as well. Honor the Lord with our wealth and the first fruit of our crops. Similarly, down the page, rich and poor have this all in common. The Lord is the maker of them all. Okay, recognizing that the Lord is God, whether rich or poor. Anything else? Good. About what did the Proverbs say about work and working? What are some of the verses that jumped out for that? It is contagious.
But diligent hands lend wealth. So, in a way, he's showing the power, because he just said, talking about don't trust
him. Yeah.
But at the same time, you know that you need money, but you have to be in business, you have to work. Everything, don't be lazy. And the only way you're going to have the money you need is to work for it.
Yeah. There's some things that I put down. The first is that, as has been pointing out, that we should honor the Lord regardless of our financial standing and recognize Him as the Maker. He's Lord over both the rich and the poor, and that we should work diligently. There's lots of warnings against the sluggard, as the word is used, the lazy, those who don't want to work. So the idea there is that we should work diligently. How does the New Testament describe that? That we are to work as for the Lord, as though we're working for God. Okay? And would we just phone it in? Would we just get by with the bare minimum, or would we do a good job, and would we serve as though we're serving our earthly boss, master, leader as we would the Lord? There's also lots of verses about being generous to the poor as well. Look back through May 23rd. Notice how many Proverbs are talking about being generous to the poor and how that's looked on when you're not generous or you're not considerate of the poor or helpful to those who are in need. You withhold from those who are in need. And then I believe there is some idea here of that, talking about considering what do we need. What do we need now? What do we need possibly later? What are our wants versus our needs? And finding a balance there. Are we just thinking about what we want and what we want right now and consuming everything that we have? We live in a consumerism society for sure. We have not grown beyond that. I mean, there is a number that comes out every year. There are numbers that show that we as a society, we waste our resources. We overconsume. We live beyond our means. And then also that we should be careful about making financial agreements. That was one that jumped out as well. We have gone past the time again. May 24th, we saw a lot of verses there about family relationships. There were other things there on May 24th. But, you know, the thing that jumped out to me the most is that families are a blessing. Our family is a blessing to us. So thank you again for your participation today, all the comments. Sorry for all the word salad that I threw at you. And thankfully, it's the last time you have to put up with that for me for a little while at least. Oh, I mean, a tight 11.
Yeah.